Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Ksuvos is daf Kuf. We're on Sadi Tess Amud Beis. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is learning the Zechon Ishmael Sliba Gabriela Bashmuel. Shlichus has been a discussion that we've had over the past couple of days. Speaking mostly about the widow acting as a shliach as she sells the property. She's selling the property of the estate. She has a ksuva and she has a mortgage against the against her late husband's estate's property. As a result of that, she sells the property and she is able to recoup her but basically get satisfied her ksuva obligation by the sale of the property. What we learned in the Mishnah. Mishnah takes us all the way back to Tzadi Ches, is that she cannot undersell the property even by one dinar. Okay, the little bit of machlokas in the Mishnah, Rosh HaMengamil, allows for a little more latitude, but in other words, the simple pshat is that she cannot undersell the property at all. And it got the Gemara talking about shlichus, and we went really off the topic of Amana and onto the topic of shliach, and we want to know, when a shliach does any type of deviation, so is that considered a cancellation of the shlichus? So generally speaking, the answer is yes. Generally speaking, once a shliach deviates from that which he was instructed to do, so therefore that is an immediate cancellation of a shlichus, and whatever he's doing now he's no longer doing as a shliach. We spoke a lot in terms of me'ila, where we know the halach is that generally the rule is ain shliach l'dvar avera, but me'ila is the exception. Whereby me'ila, if I'm doing something and I'm following instructions, so then the isser me'ila goes back to the one who sent me. It's one of the rare exceptions of ain shliach l'dvar avera, and there, once again, if I do what I'm told to do, so then the iser me'ila goes back to the one who sent me. But once I deviate, so now I'm no longer acting as a shlich, so therefore I become the moel. I'm the one who is misappropriating from the base of Mikdash. With all that stated, the Gemara asked a number of questions of what is considered deviation from instruction. Let's say, for example, I was asked to sell a lesach and I sold a kor. Lesach is a certain area of property. It's half of a kor. And So let's say I was told to sell a lesach of property, and I sold the kor. So a kor is twice as much as a lesach. So did I deviate from instruction? Well, clearly I did. In other words, I was asked to sell a lesach, and instead I sold the kor. But can we say that at least what I did is I did what I was told to do, and I added on top of that as well? Is that considered a hosafa? Certainly the second lesach that I sold is not going to be a valid sale. That goes without saying. But the first lesach maybe could be that I'm compliant with my instruction. So that was a question the Gemara asked. The Gemara first left that question unresolved, and the Gemara assumed, let's call it a hosafa. Let's now go in the other direction. The other direction is, I was told to sell a kor, and instead I sold a lesach. I sold half of that. Is that considered deviation from the instruction that I was given? Is that sale going to be voided because I was no longer following instruction? Maybe what I could argue, says the Gemara yesterday, is that me, the shliach, I did a good thing. Meaning, because look, you wanted to sell it. You asked me to sell a kor, and I only sold half that amount. So look, the truth of the matter is that if you need to sell the other half, you'll do it. And meanwhile, if it turns out that this is all the money you needed, so then you ended up with the money you needed plus half of the property. So
maybe two halves is worth less than the whole.
Yeah. Right? Okay, we're in the world of making arguments. Maybe he can make that argument. And the Gemara ended up saying yesterday, well, that's what we're in the middle of discussing. We're in the middle of discussing now this case of where I was asked to sell two and I sold one. Okay, so not exactly, but yeah. I was asked to sell kor and then I sold the lesach, tashma. So we are now on the very top of Sadi Tess Amud Beis. We're continuing this discussion. Gemara says, tashma, come in here. We're about to quote either a Mishnah or a Braisa. Ha'isek suvasa arba mea zuz. This is a Mishnah. It's our Mishnah. So the her suva was 400 zuz. Ma'achor lezebemanav, alachron yafemanav adinar. So she sold off four parcels of land, each one for 100 except for that last parcel of land. Last parcel of land she sold off for manav adinar. So just one dinar over what its value is, bimana, and she sold it for 100 shalach and batav shikula machin kayim. So for all the the first three sales, they're good sales. The last one's not going to be good. So so what do you see over here? You see over here that she was asked to sell a land worth 400, and she did it in parts. She sold one part, followed then by another part, followed then by another part. So it's analogous to the instruction of being sold, told to sell a kor, and instead of selling a kor, they sold a sold a lasach. To which the Gemara says, it's this Mishnah is not really a raya. Kedam Rav Shisha Breid Rav Idi Bekatina Hachanam Bekatina. So the Gemara says, look, the Mishnah over here, don't make too much of this Mishnah. It could very well be this is no kimta. This is just a case that we're suggesting the Mishnah is describing. Is that the Mishnah is describing where these four lands were non-contiguous. It wasn't one large field, and she's selling off portions of this one large field. But rather, Mishnah is describing where there were different parcels of land, non-contiguous to one another, and really the only way she could have sold it is in parts. So therefore, the Mishnah is describing such a scenario. But had it been that it had been one large field, then she should be selling the one large field at one time, and not in pieces, not in parts.
But
okay.
If that's the case, they benefit from it, from the last sale.
Well, she did in that last sale, she undersold it. She sold the land that was worth 101, and she sold it for 100.
Right.
She undersold it. And because she undersold it, so that's why and she's causing now a loss to the estate, so she has no right to do that. Okay. Pshita. All right, good. That is one more question to explore, and then with that we'll start today's daf and the new mission in today's daf. One more question we have.
In the last case, I mean, the four separate things, it's four separate deals,
yeah,
basically.
Right.
All we care about is the last one. The other three are okay.
And
so what is that to give the case?
The Gemara suggested yesterday that maybe you might have thought that there should be a gzeira, meaning that it's true that in the last property that she sold, she was obviously malfeasant. Right, I understood. But the Gemara suggested yesterday that I might have thought that I should nullify all sales because in this case, it happened to have been that the last field she sold was she undersold. But next time, I don't know what that means next time. but next time she'll do it again, and maybe it'll be the first field that she'll undersell, or the second field she'll undersell. And okay, that was what the Gemara suggested yesterday as a havamina. Okay, pshita. I'm alechav alo l'shnayim. So let's say again we're going back to now basic instructions given to the shliach. I have a land. I want you to sell it. Sell it to one buyer. And he was very specific. And he said, Le'echav alo l'shnayim. His instruction was one and not two. So, that's obvious. Meaning there, the mishaleach, the one who's sending, the owner of the property, is very clear with his instruction. I want one recipient of the property to the exclusion of two. Okay, good. Hamar le'echav alo l'shnayim. Sorry, what did I just do? Le'echav alo l'shnayim. Good. Hamar le'echav alo l'shnayim. Good. Hamar le'echad stama. But let's say, here we get now to the question. What if he said, just, I want you to sell to one person? But he didn't say, v'lo l'shnayim. So my. So under these circumstances now, when the shliach now goes and finds a buyer, is he limited to only finding one buyer? And if he can't find a buyer, so then he cannot sell it? Or let's say there was no one buyer, but there were two separate buyers. Each one of them was interested in half the property. So can he do that? And his instruction was only, le'echad. And it wasn't le'echav lo l'shnayim. So my Rav Huna amar le'echav lo l'shnayim. So Rav Huna says, no. When the Mishaleach says one, he meant one to the exclusion of two. And Rav Chista, Rav Huna, Dami Tavai, le'echav afil l'shnayim. And Rav Chista together with Rabba, but Rav Huna says, no. When you say one, it does not exclude two. It means, principally, I would like one. But in other words, sell the land. Le'echav afil l'meya. And even if it's 100 recipients. Now the Gemara yesterday talked about the idea that, generally speaking, people don't like a lot of paperwork, okay, which is true. But when I say paperwork, I mean that now that means that instead of going to be one bill of sale, so it's going to be multiple bills of sale. Remember, with each bill of sale, that also includes in that recourse against you, that in the event that the property is taken away. And so now, if you sell the property to 100 different people, that's 100 different people coming after you in the event that there needs to be recourse. So, admittedly, this position is a little bit harder to understand, but still, the instruction was just not one to the exclusion of two. The instruction was just simply sell it. Ikla Rav Nachman Lasura. So Rav Nachman goes and visits Sura. Ola Gabe Rav Chisav Rav Huna. And these Amarayim, right, whose opinion we just espoused, they're the ones who say that one does not exclude two. So Amru Lei Ki Aygav Namai. So they ask Rav Nachman, what's your opinion? So Amru Lei Le'echav Afil L'Shlayim Le'echav Afil L'Meo. And Rav Nachman agreed that one is not to the exclusion of two. One buyer can mean two buyers, one buyer can mean 100 buyers. Amru Lei Afagav D'Tash Liach. So what if the Shlech made a mistake? Okay, the made a mistake. In other words, he undersells the property. Meaning, are you there going to still accredit the sale? So Amalei, the Tashlich, Lo Kamina, Sref Nachman says, no, I'm not talking about that. Amalei, V'Amamar, Eino Nala Karkaos. Now, as a rule, don't we have this rule of there's no Ona by Karkaos? Okay, good. This week's Parsha. We know there's an Isser Ona in the Torah that you cannot undersell or oversell something more or less than a sixth of its market value. If you do that, Mechel Batel, the sale is going to be null and void. However, we also know that that's only true as it relates to movables, Metatalin. But as it relates to Karka, there's no Ona'a by Karka. Now, exactly what that means is not clear. The Gemara never states exactly what that means. Then you have a range of options in terms of how the Rishonim understand what does that mean? There's no ona by karka. Some rishonim say that there's no ona, meaning there's no the sale is valid even though you violated the isser of ona. But in other words, but the sale is still going to be valid. Some rishonim say you have until half of its value, and some rishonim say in this last rishonim is the Rambam. Rambam says that when it comes to property, there's just simply no there's no fixed value to property. The property value fluctuates to such a degree that at no point in time is there any ever going to be a fixed value. The Rambam takes the most extreme version of what the Gemara means by Eino Na LeKarkos. And so over here we know, okay, so wherever you are on the understanding of Eino Na LeKarkos, but we know that there's no Isser of Ona when it comes to property. So Hani Mila, just one second. Hani Mila Hecha Deta Balabais. So the Gemara says, true. When the Balabais, the owner of the property, is making the sale of the property, so then there's no Ona. So in other words, whatever the price of the property is sold for, that's what it's sold for. Aval Tashliach, but we're not talking about when the owner sold the property. We're talking about when the Shliach may have sold the property. So, and there, the Shliach does not have such a range. In other words, underselling or overselling the property is not within the right of the Shliach. Because the Shliach is there serving as you. He's a proxy of you. However, in built into every Shlichus is the understanding that you're there to help me. In other words, I sent you as my Shliach, and you do represent me. But like an attorney in court, meaning, right, you're acting on my behalf, but obviously in my interest. If you're doing something that is harmful to me, so that I didn't send you to do. Now, if I act on my own, so I could do whatever I want. In other words, if I want to make a profit, if I want to take a loss, I'll do whatever I want. But if I'm sending a shliach, so built into the shliach is this idea of l'tkunish adartich v'lo lavuseh. So the Gemara says that's the difference. Meaning, so the bala by selling, ain't no la karkos. You can sell whatever price you want. Once the shliach is selling it, so obviously I wanted to sell it at a good price, not at a bad price.
But if he oversells, it's benefiting the owner.
Good, so, right.
Why would that be?
When the Gemara made the suggestion earlier that he was Toa, so Rashi understands that to mean that he undersells.
Undersells.
Okay.
But so, obviously the Balabai didn't tell him how much to sell it for.
No, but understood. But there's some understood market value. There's an appraisal. He should know, right? The Gemara says, and just let me just quickly illustrate to you this idea that there's a difference between the Balabai doing something and Ishlech doing something. Let's use this through the example of Truma. Ha'omer l'shluchot sevet shrom. So let's say I'm away and I call my shliach up and I say, look, go to my field and take off truma from my field. Taking off truma, probably he means take off truma semaisos.
Now, take from the field. You got to take it to the house.
No? Wherever it may be. Okay. So the truma, the Torah never tells us how much truma to give to a kohen. The Torah just simply says you have to take off a portion to the kohen. And so the Chachamim stepped in, and the Chachamim gave shape and form to this mitzvah, the Torah of truma. And so the Chachamim said truma you should give 2% over to the kohen, 1/50. But then the Chachamim said, it's not really in stages, but the Chachamim said, but 1/50 is for Adam Beinoni. That's for a person who is not overly generous, not overly miserly, someone who's right in the middle. Right, in the Shvil HaZahav, in the Golden Path. But if somebody is overly generous, so then he can give a 40th. If someone is miserly, he can give a 60th. So in other words, in the world, in the mitzvah of giving off truma, there really is a range. You can go anywhere between a 40th to a 60th, with the 50th being the Adam Beinoni, 2% is the Adam Beinoni. So let's say I instruct my shliach to go and take off truma. So term kedas balabais. Now, what does he have to do? So he has a mitzvah to take off truma. So what should he do? Should he give off a 40th, a 50th, a 60th? So here, the shliach is given room for estimation, evaluation. What is he going to evaluate? The generosity of the one who sent him, the owner, owner of the house, owner of the field. All right, miserly guy. That guy's such a miser. Okay, good. So I'll give off a 60th. Guy was very generous. Okay, so I'll take off a 40th. So fine. So the Mishnah over here makes a very intuitive statement, which is, let's say you don't know. So if you don't know, so go with the average. Go with the 50th. Now let's say he makes a call. The shliach, and he says, I'm going to give off a 40th because I think he's really generous. And the owner comes back, and the owner says, no, I'm not. You really don't know me. Get to know me. Right? I'm not very generous. I look very generous, but I'm not. So I would have given a 50th. So the Mishnah says, truma so truma, still it's acceptable. So in other words, within the range, the shliach does have a certain amount of leeway where he can make executive decision, but his executive decision is only limited to only going to as much, giving away as much of a 40th or as little as the 60th, but that's it. Now, the ilu got by the balabais. Now, let's go to the balabais himself. If he took off truma, so what's his range? He's a much wider range. The Mishnah tells us. Haisik suvasa. Sorry, what I do? I read the wrong Mishnah. Tanya, it's a braisa. The ilu got balabais. Tanya will enter braisa. Tanya balabi adu afilecha me esrim truma so truma. If the balabais gives 1/20th, so he's giving now 5% to truma, which is far greater than the average 2% that's given over to the Kohen as Truma. So the Mishnah says Truma, so Truma. So already you see that the Baal HaBayis has a much bigger berth in terms of his range of how much he can give away for Truma, more so than the Shliach. Okay, so good. Just an example of where we see clearly the distinction between a Shliach and a Baal HaBayis. Tashma, the Gemara, one more time is going to try to prove its case. Again, the question that we're addressing is, if let's say the owner of the field says to the shliach, I want you to sell it to one. But he doesn't say one to the exclusion of two. He doesn't say echad v'lo l'shtayim. He just simply says echad. So, and the shliach then sells it to more than one person, valid or invalid. So the Gemara says, let's take a look at our Mishnah. So again, we get to hear this case in the Mishnah one more time. And that is, she sells off, she's owed 400, she sells off land number 1 for 100, land number 2 for 100, land number 3 for 100, and the last land, the last piece of land, she undersold. Even though she only undersold it by dinar, that last sale is voided. Meanwhile, what just happened? She sold off this property to 4 different people. And the only problem was her undersale of that last field. Otherwise, it's perfectly legitimate. Don't you see from the Mishnah that she was not told, she wasn't given instruction one and not two, she was just given instruction to sell. Sell to one. And meanwhile, she sold to 4 different people. So the Gemara says, Amar Shisha Bered Ravidi Bikatine. So the Gemara says, yeah, but remember, we already gave an Ukimta in the Mishnah. We're going to stick with that Ukimta. And that is, the Mishnah is talking about a case where they were non-contiguous properties. And so by definition, the properties were meant to be sold to 4 different people. Fine. So we don't have a proof from our Mishnah.
It doesn't address the issue. So by the same token, if he sold to more than one, then sell is void, right? If it was not...
The Gemara is just deflecting the proof.
I know.
Right, okay, so...
Ayaz didn't say sell to one, he just sell.
Okay.
He didn't say one, he didn't say anything.
Good. All right. We already discussed at length the idea that when a woman sells property, so she depends on what she sells for. She sells for mizonos, so then she does not need to sell in front of Beis Din. If she, under the authority of Beis Din. If she sells for Ksuva, so she has to sell under the authority of Beis Din. So sometimes her sale of property is going to be not under the jurisdiction of Beis Din, and sometimes her sale of property will be under the jurisdiction of Beis Din. And, okay, now the difference is, that we discussed earlier, Beis Din slows everything down. Okay, in other words, and that's part of the reason, that's part of the distinction. Right? For food, obviously, she needs food. She needs food today, so therefore, when she sells off property, she doesn't have to do it with Beis Din because Beis Din slows everything down. On the other hand, selling through Beis Din is a good thing because it slows everything down, but it obviously provides more assurance and more guarantee that the sale is going to be a valid sale, it's going to be a good sale, it's being done under the authority of Beis Din. And so what we're going to be discussing now in this Mishnah is, when property is sold under the authority of Beis Din, is there any kind of room for error when Beis Din sells a property? So the Mishnah says, yes, there is. Shum hadayanim, when appraisals are done by the judges. So in other words, Beis Din is the one who is now, all the sales being done under the jurisdiction of the Beis Din, and the appraisals being done under the supervision of Beis Din. And They didn't get it right. No, they didn't make a perfectly good appraisal of the property. Either they undervalued it by a six or they overvalued by a six. According to the Tanakhama of the Mishnah, the sale is going to be a voided sale. Now, let's make sure that we get this straight. We just said in the Gemara, like about 20 lines ago, ain't onah l'karkos, that there is no iser v'onah when it comes to karka. So in other words, when we talk about property, so there's no such thing as undersale or oversale. In other words, let's take the most extreme version, let's take the Rambam's version of this understanding, and that is that there simply is no onah by property. Okay. So we're not really discussing onah. In other words, even though, and it's interesting because the fractions that we use over here of a six are the fractions of onah. In other words, the basic halacha of onah is as follows. If I sell you an item, I sell you, let's say, a car, and let's, just for argument's sake, I know it's impossible to make this argument, but for argument's sake, let's say there is a fair market value to this car. Okay? And I sell it to you for anything, for either its value or anything up to a six, over or under, the sale's valid. If I sell it to you for a six of its above or below its market value, so then what the halacha is that the sale is valid, but I have to refund the difference, depending on which way it went, over sale or under sale. And then finally, the last example in onah is, let's say I sell it over a six or under a six, so then the halacha is mechobato. That's the rules when it comes to onah. So again, below a six, sale's good. At a six, a refund of the difference. Above a six, the sale is voided. That's by onah. But now we're talking about property. And property is not subject to the isurim of onah, even though the Mishnah is using the same type of fraction. And that's why it could certainly be confusing. I totally understood. But over here, we're talking about malpractice on the part of Beis Din, where Beis Din erred. And the question now on the table is, when Beis Din errs, and there was malpractice done by Beis Din, so is there a reversal of what Beis Din does? So the Tanakhama says, depends. If Beis Din's malpractice was up to a sixth of its value, so that is allowable, that passes. Meaning at that point in time, Beis Din is given that kind of width in terms of room for error. And then Rav Shimon Gamliel in the Mishnah says, no, I'm going to give a much wider berth. Rav Shimon Gamliel, Omer Machron Kayim, Im Kein Makoach Beis Din Yofa. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, no. There is a much wider room of error on the part of Beis Din, where Beis Din, if sells it properly, either undersells or oversells the property. And even though their quote-unquote mistake, now again, we're talking about property, so it's hard to argue mistake, but let's just assume that there was an appraisal, and their appraisal was not really a good appraisal. So according to Shimon Gamliel, whatever they set the price to be, the sale is going to be a valid sale. Because once you take the sale away, you're really taking the power of Beis Din away. And Rav Shimon Gamliel says, we want to give more koach to Beis Din, more power to Beis Din, and so therefore, we're going to allow for more room for error. Now, he doesn't tell us what the limits are of that of the error. In other words, intuitively, everyone here understands that there's got to be a point in time where that was just a gross error on the part of Beis Din. Later today, we'll talk about what the limit is. But in other words, what we certainly know at this point in time is Rav Shimon Gamliel allows for more than a six. That much we know. Let's say the house was sold on auction. What the Mishnah refers to as Igeres Bikaris, literally a letter of investigation. But that means, Rashi points out, it's Hachrazah. It means that there was an announcement, there was an auction. If the property was sold by auction, so then there's no such thing as a mistake. Because really, all right, in the modern economics, I mean, really what the auction is basically doing is it's setting the market value of the property. That's really what the auction is doing. So you can't then argue that, no, the property is really worth this. Really the auction, the market dictates what the price of the house is worth. Okay, Ibai Lahu. Shliach Kaman. The Gemara's question goes like this. Did you notice that in the two cases that we've been discussing now in the past two Mishnayos, who is the seller of the property? In the not in the Mishnah we just learned, but in the previous Mishnah, going all the way back to Tzadi Ches, yeah, we talked about the widow selling the property. Now she's acting like a Shliach, but as we already pointed out a number of times, it's a little bit different. Because she's interested. She's an interested party in that sale. Because the proceeds of that sale are going to go to her. So it's not fair to fully describe her as a shliach, although we did. And we just talked about Beis Din. Beis Din selling the property of the orphans. So we have now two people that we just sold the property of the orphans, the widow and the Beis Din. Now, by the widow, what's the halacha when it comes to the widow? We allow for her zero room for error. Remember the previous Mishnah? She undersold the property by one dinar, and the sale is over. The sale is voided. So in other words, the widow has zero room for error. Meanwhile, Beis Din sells the property, they have at least a 6 room for error, and according to Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, even more than that. So now we have our two extremes. We have the widow and we have the Beis Din. And so the Gemara says, okay, good. Now what about just a regular shliach? Okay, nice simple case where a shliach was sent to sell the property of the orphans, not Beis Din and not a widow. What is the shliach, where does he fall in line in terms of comparison? Do we compare him to an Amman or do we compare him to a Beis Din? And so the Gemara is going to present an argument for either direction.
Why don't we compare him to the Baal HaBayis? Makes
more
sense.
No, he's no. Lisha, remember the yeah, but remember the Gemara just earlier today said that when you send a shliach, right? Let kunish adartich v'lo lavusin. Okay, ibaylu shliach kaman. Okay, top of kuf amar aleph. Rav amar Rav Nachman shliach kedayanim. Rav Shmuel bar Bizna amar Rav Nachman kamanim. Okay, so the good news is that both of these opinions are espoused in the name of Rav Nachman. The bad news, of course, is that they're two different opinions. So either it could be just a break in the Masorah, or it could be Rav Nachman himself espoused both opinions. And you know, he wavered on this issue. And it could, I'm speculating. I'm not saying pshat in the Gemara. And it could be that each one of them is just reflecting a different stage of Rav Nachman's life. Okay. Just a possibility, just to consider. Anyway, Rav Shmuel bar Bizna Amar Rav Nachman Kamana. So the Gemara is going to argue both of these sides. Rava Amar Rav Nachman Shlech Kadayanim. So according to Rava, quoting Rav Nachman, the Shlech is compared to a Dayan. Ma Dayanim Lavli Didu, Av Shlech Nami Lavli Didei. Lafuki Amana Dili Dida. Okay, so the reason why Shlech should be on the side of the Dayanim is as follows. When the Dayan sells, he does not have a self-interest. Same thing with the Shlech. Shlich is just doing it as an agent. He's not benefiting. All gains or losses are going to go to the estate. And he's doing this as altruistically as one can imagine. Okay, in other words, he was asked to do it, but he doesn't benefit. Meanwhile, the Almana, she's the recipient of that sale. She's going to be the direct beneficiary of that sale. So when it comes to the Almana, we're going to allow no room for error because she's the beneficiary of that sale. As a contrast that to the Shliach and to the Dayan, who don't get benefit from that sale. So that's an argument one can make to put the Shliach on the side of Dayanim. On the other hand, Rav Shmuel bar Bizna Amar Rav Nachman Kamana, Ma'aman Yechida Av Shliach Yachid, Lafuke Beis Din DeRabim Ninu. On the other hand, you can make the following argument. When it comes to the widow who's selling, she's selling it on her own. So she's an independent seller. And sometimes when you act independently, so you make mistakes. In other words, you have no one to bounce ideas off of, no one to dialogue with, no one to discourse with. And so therefore, more room for error. And so therefore, no room for error is allowed. And the same thing can be said regarding a shliach. A shliach is also acting independently. And so therefore, he has no one to talk to, no one to bounce ideas off of. And so therefore, no, we don't allow for any room for error. As opposed to a Beis Din, a Beis Din is a group. And a Beis Din is a group, so that means then that they talk to one another, they discourse, they dialogued. And so I guess it's hard to articulate the svar over here, but I guess then their error is not as gross an error. I'm not really sure how to articulate this well, but that's the difference between the Beis Din versus the Shliach and the Almana. So Shliach, therefore, V'hilchus HaShliach HaAlmana. And then the Gemara concludes on this matter, and that is that the Shliach has the same status as of an Almana, and that means zero room for error. So if the Shliach sells a property and undersells it by even one dinar, the sale is voided. Second time today we get to see the Mishnah. What's the difference between that and the case of the Truma? Case of Truma, good, let's go over this again, second time today. You were instructed by the owner of the property to take off Truma. You go out to the field and you take off Truma. So how much do you take off? How much the owner would have taken off? Again, the range is a 40th, a 50th, or a 60th. Now, if you don't know what he's thinking, if you don't know if he's... If if he's cheap or generous, so then go for the middle, go right for a 50th, give 2%. Now, if you give less or more than that, as long as it's within the 10th, in other words, 1/40th or 1/60th, so the truma is going to be a valid truma. So over there, what do you have? You have a range. So in other words, the amount you should have given was a 50th, and meanwhile, if you give a little bit less or a little bit more, that's acceptable. So meanwhile, in the sale of the property of the estate of the orphans, so we said any error is going to void the sale. What's the difference? So the Gemara says this, the difference was pretty simple. So there, in the case of Truma, some people give a 40th and some people give a 60th. Meaning, there is a range. There's a built-in range to how much you give for Truma. Meaning, the amount that you give for Truma is not a precise 1/50th. It's somewhere within the range of 1/40th to 1/60th. And what you then are allowed to do is you're allowed to work within that range. Now, you thought he was very generous and you were wrong. But that doesn't call back the, it doesn't disqualify the Truma. In other words, because you were still within the range. But here, when you're selling land, so there is no range, meaning the sale of the land is based on its properly appraised value. And you undersold it even by one dinar, that's no good. That's toast. That's a mistake. And you're basically allowed to say to him, no, I didn't allow you for room for error, not even by one dinar. Amar Rav Huna, period. Okay, back to our Mishnah. Beis Din is allowed a certain room for error. How much room for error? So we saw in the Mishnah, it's a machlokas between the Tanakhama, Shemim, and Gamliel. Tanakhama says up to a 6. They're allowed room for error. Not based on the halachas of Ona, just simply that's how much room they have to make error. And Rav Shimon and Gamliel says, no, it's greater than a 6. Because if you don't allow them room for error, makoch Beis Din Yafa. Now, who does the halacha fall like? I'm Rav Huna Bar Chinin, I'm Rav Nachman, halacha kedivrei chachamim. So the Gemara quotes in the name of Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman gets a lot of play today in today's daf. So he says the halacha falls like the chachamim, that up to a 6, the Beis Din has room for error, but not greater than that. Now, v'leisele Rav Nachman, makoch Beis Din yafa. So the Gemara says, wait a second, slow down. We know that Rav Nachman subscribes to the idea of makoch Beis Din yafa. Now, we're about to prove that in just a moment. And once we prove that, so then it only begs the question. Given the choices in our Mishnah, who we should follow like, Rav Nachman should follow like Rav Shimon Gamliel, who subscribes to the idea of Makoch Beis Din Yafeh. Where do we see that Rav Nachman subscribes to this idea? V'amar Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel, the Gemara quotes the following. Yisomim Shebao Lachlok B'nichzei Aviyam. Beis Din Ma'amidim Lahem Apotropos. Let's say we have orphans and there's an estate and the estate needs to be divided. And for whatever reason, we can't wait till the minors grow up. And so therefore, Beis Din does the following. They appoint an apotropos, a custodian, not really a custodian, more like an attorney, if you will, who basically is going to advocate on behalf of one of the kids. So, and each one of them is appointed an apotropos, and what's going to happen now is that your representative, your apotropos, is going to advocate on your behalf, and the land is going to get divided in that way. And you're going to get a good portion. Now, by the way, good portion, I mean, keep in mind, everyone's getting an equitable share of the estate. Okay, but so hold on one second as we're going to get back to what that could possibly mean when we say chelak yafeh. Now, this is Rav Nachman quoting his Rebbe Shmuel. And Rav Nachman quoting his Rebbe Shmuel says is that when the kids get older, and as adults now, they now understand, they process exactly what happened in terms of the division of the estate, and they realize my apotropos did a terrible job advocating on my behalf. So according to Shmuel, as reported by Rav Nachman, later on they do have the right to protest and challenge the original distribution of the estate. Rav Nachman didei amar, and Rav Nachman himself says, no, I disagree with Shmuel. And I say, Higdilu ein yecholim limchos. They cannot challenge. Meaning because that division that was done when they were kids was done under the auspices of Beis Din. And, Imkein makoach Beis Din yafeh. If you're challenging the distribution, you're really challenging Beis Din. And Rav Nachman says, and I don't want that. I want to empower Beis Din. And so therefore, I'm going to employ this rule, Makoch Beis Din Yafa. And so therefore, the division is not challengeable. So we are now stuck. Because we see that Rav Nachman subscribes to this idea of Makoch Beis Din Yafa. In the case of the ability of the orphans, when they grow up, to challenge the division of the property. Meanwhile, in our Mishnah, Rav Nachman says, Halach is like the Tanakhama, not like Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. And meanwhile, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel is predicated on the principle of Makoch Beis Din Yafa. That's a problem. So the Gemara says, Lo Kasha. Gemara says, here's how we could resolve it. How to tell, how to lo tell. In our Mishnah, Beis Din made a mistake. They undersold the property by over a sixth. That's a mistake. So even though, generally speaking, I like the rule of Makoch Beis Din Yafa, but not if there was malfeasance that was done on the part of Beis Din. That was a mistake. And so that gets reversed. Over here, we're talking about the distribution of property. No mistake was made. So now, it only begs the next question. If no mistake was made, so what are the kids protesting? I'm setting up the Gemara. I know the next give and take of the Gemara. So idolota b'mayichol limchos. So the Gemara says, fine, so if there was no mistake, so what are you challenging? So beruchos. So the Gemara says, you know what they're challenging? They're challenging not how much they received. Everyone received a fair portion of the estate. What the challenging, however, is, I can't believe you gave me the east side. You gave me the east side? I should be entitled to the west side. Rashi over here explains why the west side would have been better. Now, I'm the one who's providing directions, but you get the basic idea. In other words, I should have gotten that property over there. The amount was good, but I can't believe you gave it to me over here. Should give me over there. Happens to be, as I'm just presenting Rashi, happens to be that I own another property over there on the west. And so if you would have, or if my upper choppers would have given me that property, so then I would have had a contiguous parcel of land. But now you gave me on the east side, so now I got land over here and I got land over there, and that I didn't like. What's interesting, to me at least, is that the Gemara describes this as being that's not an error by the apotropos. One could have made the argument, I'm trying to make the argument, I don't know if I'm right, that sounds like a mistake. Meaning if there was an opportunity in which you could have had a contiguous, one large contiguous property, and your apotropos instead, you know, argue that, nah, you know, give him the west side. Right, beautiful sunset over there, he'll love it. Like that to me sounds like a mistake. And meanwhile, the Gemara describes it as not a mistake. That was like a subjective decision that was made on the part of the apotropos, but that doesn't fall into the category of a mistake. Okay. So now, once again, we're back to the question of who do we paskin like? Do we paskin like the Chachamim or Rav Shimon Gamliel in terms of based in making an error? So the Gemara quotes an incident regarding Rebbe, where Rebbe first issued a ruling like the Chachamim, meaning that a Beis Din appraised the property of the Yesomim, sold the property of the Yesomim, and they made an error above a six. And Rebbe said, no good, void the sale. Amalafana Prata, Benosha, Rebbe Lazar Ben Prata, Ben Benosha, Rebbe Prata, Gadol. So, Imke Makoch Beis Din Yafa. So, Tana goes over to Rebbe Yehuda Nasi and says, wait a second, you are disempowering Beis Din. No, in other words, we should empower Beis Din based on the principle of Makoch Beis Din Yafa. Or, let's put it in other terms, we go like Rebbe Shimon Gamliel. What are you doing, passing like the Chachamim? V'yichze Rebbe, it's a Maisa. And Rebbe says, you know what, you're right. That's an excellent point. Okay? So Rebbe reversed his decision. That's one version of the story. The Gemara tells us the second version of the same story. Rav Dimi Masnihachi, Rav Safra Masnihachi. Maisa, ubikesh Rebbe, lasos kedivri Chachamim. Now in the second version of the story, Rebbe didn't issue a ruling like the Chachamim, but he was about to. He was inclined to do so. And Amalafana Prata Benosha Rabbi Lazar Ben Prata Ben Benosha Rabbi Prata Gadlam Kane Makoch Beis Din Yafa. To which now, one of the members of the court turns to Rebbe and says, no, don't do that. Because if you reverse the ruling of the court, so then Makoch Beis Din Yafa, so then you're taking away the power of Beis Din. We don't want to do that. We want to empower Beis Din. So Lo Asa Rebbe, so Rebbe did not rescind the ruling of Beis Din. Now, in these two versions, they're basically the same story, but in version number one, Rebbe actually reversed his ruling. In ruling number two, he never issued a first ruling, so that he needed to reverse it. But he was thinking about it. So, Lema Bakim Iflagi, the Gemara would like to provide an analytical explanation of the subtle difference between the two stories. And maybe the analysis goes like this. Mar Sefer Tav B'Dvar Mishnah Chozer, Mar Sefer Einu Chozer. Look, the court went over a six. And Rebbe said, oh, that's malfeasance. And Rebbe issued a ruling. And when you issue a ruling, so can you go back on the ruling that you issued? And this takes us to the issue of Toa B'Dvar Mishnah. Meaning, and what the if you ruled against a straight out Mishnah, so is that such malpractice on the part of the one who rules that he can recant on his ruling? Now this is interesting because the Gemara describes this as Toa B'Dvar Mishnah. Now if you look back at our Mishnah, you don't have to go back that far. You'll know that in the Mishnah, it's not a clear-cut Mishnah. Right. It's a machlokes between the Chacham and Rishim and Gamliel. So it's a little bit strange that the Gemara is describing this now as the Toa B'Dvar Mishnah. Now again, I'm going to quote Rashi. And Rashi says it's Toa B'Dvar Mishnah because Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel provides a reason. And that's powerful. So when the Mishnah gives the reason, so that speaks volumes. Now, I don't fully understand that. Meaning, I'm sure the Chachamim have a reason as well. The Mishnah didn't articulate the reason behind the Chachamim. So again, just admitting my shortcomings in understanding the Gemara, how the Gemara can describe this as being a Toa B'Dvar Mishnah. Okay, but the Gemara does. And so the Gemara says maybe that's an issue between the two versions of the story. According to the first version of the story, Rebbe actually recanted on his original ruling because he was reminded of the opinion of Rishim ben Gamliel, who says that we shouldn't overturn the mistake because makoch beis nyafa. And in the second version, Rebbe, if he would have issued an original ruling, he would not have gone back on the original ruling. So the Gemara says no, that's not the way to explain the machlokas. Lo, dekuli amatov b'dvar mishnah chozer. No, if you make a mistake that goes directly against the Mishnah, it was such a blatant mistake. So then chozer, then we go back and you recant on the ruling that you did. Over here, the explanation of the distinction, the subtle difference is they just simply have two different versions of what happened. It's really that simple. Amar of Yosef. Okay, let's do a little bit more for today.
What happened here? I know the mistake is going to be overturned or
not. One second. We'll get to the final conclusion in just a moment. Okay, Amar of Yosef. Armalasa de Zabina Achraisa Yasme. You know that with every sale of land, there's recourse. We've been talking about that a lot lately in our Masechta. So you sell a piece of property, and one of your creditors come in and they take the property away. So the buyer of that property has recourse now. And who is his recourse against? Obviously, it's against the seller, right? You sold me a property. The property was taken away. Okay, yeah, you owe me. I mean, obviously. But this is what's called selling a property with a chayus, with a personal guarantee, so that in the event that the property is taken away from you, so now recourse is against the seller. Good. If and when the Yisomim's property is taken away, whether it's the woman who sells the property or whether it's Beis Din who sells the property, recourse is against the Yisomim, recourse is against the orphans. Now, it's a harsh ruling, but what's the other option? Of course, recourse is against.
She's only a shliach.
Beis Din is only a shliach. Why in the world would you have considered anything other than the idea that recourse is against the estate? So the Gemara is going to ask that very question. I'm Rav Yosef. I'm Alasa de Zabina Achrayas Yasme. Or Beis Din de Zabina Achrayas Yasme. In both of the cases where she, the widow, selling the property, or Beis Din selling the property, recourse is going against the Yisomim. To which the Gemara just utters one simple word, and pshita. Well, that's obvious, isn't it? Meaning, who else would recourse go against? The Gemara says, look, if the widow sells the property, you're right. It is a davar pashut that recourse goes against the orphans. She's a shliach. The Gemara says, I'll tell you where the chiddush is, and that's the following. What if Beis Din sells the property? Kol dezabin mi beidina adaita lamepik lekalahu dezabin. The Gemara gives us the following havamina, and the havamina goes like this: you're buying a property now, and you're buying it from Beis Din. Now, it's not, you're not buying it from Beis Din. Again, Beis Din is just serving as a shliach. But in other words, it's through Beis Din you're buying the property. So that is a big deal. The Gemara describes it as adaita lamepik lekala. It is obviously a much more public event now, and therefore people have more security when buying property. And so what? Look at the top Rashi on Kuf Amud Beis. Rashi writes, Lefi shehin mochrim b'achraza ubituach halokeach she'ilu haya alam asikin hayo yotzin me'ararin. Rashi says, look, when you're buying from Beis Din, you're pretty much assuming clear title on the property. Because if there's anyone who is going to come challenge, now's the time to challenge, now that Beis Din is selling the property. And so therefore, because you're buying it from Beis Din, again, it's not from Beis Din, we understand, it's through Beis Din. But because you're buying it through Beis Din, so therefore, you're going to waive the guarantee. You, the buyer, are basically going to say, I'm assuming free title, free and clear title, and so therefore, I'm buying it with no achrayus. Now, we have a general discussion throughout the Gemara of whether or not achrayus is an assumed position in the sale of property. But right now, what the Gemara is suggesting is that, again, as a havamina, when you buy from Beis Din, you're waiving any type of ability of recourse. So, Kamash Malan, the Gemara says that's a chiddush. Chiddush is no. That even when you buy through Beis Din, you are not waiving your right of recourse, and so therefore, if the property is taken away from you, you still have the ability to go after the Yisomim in order to recoup your loss. Rav Shimon Gamla Omer, Ve'ad Kama. Okay. We know in the Mishnah that there's a machlokas between the Tanakhama and Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Tanakhama is of the opinion that Beis Din has only a 6 range of room of error. Anything above that, and the sale is voided. And Rav Shimon ben Gamliel says, no, give him more than a 6 because him came up koch Beis Din Yafeh. And now we know that he allows more than a 6, but is there a limit? And the Gemara says, yes, there is. Va'ad Kama, Rav Huna bar Yehuda, Rav Sheshes ad Palga, you have up until half. Now, exactly what half means, I'll explain right now. Tanya Mecha, the Gemara quotes a Brisa. Amar Shimon Gamliel, Beis Din Shemachu Shava Masayim Bemana. Let's say the property is worth 200. And Beis Din, for whatever reason, look, people are fallible. And Beis Din sells the property for only 100. Oh, Shava Mana Bemasayim. Or let's say the property was really 100 and they sold it for 200. Machran Kayim. So it's interesting. Half does not mean half does not mean half of its current value. Meaning half meaning if the mistake they made is up to a half in either direction, plus or negative. So in other words, the property was really 100 and they sold it for 200. Okay, so good for the Yisomim, bad for the buyer. But still, in other words, up to half of. In other words, whatever the sale price was, and whatever the real price was, so that is allowable. Okay. I read the Tanya Me'achi. No. I thought I did. Tanya Me'achi Amar Shimon Gamliel Beis Din Shemachu Shava Masayim B'Mana or Shava Mana B'Masayim Machem Kayim. Okay, good. So that is the range within Rav Shimon Gamliel. Okay, let's quickly recap, and tomorrow we'll pick it up with the last part of Acharaza. Okay, today we finished up the discussion of whether or not a shliach follows instructions to a T, and any time he does not follow instructions, he's going to be voiding the shlichus, including if he sells, let's say, twice more than he was instructed to sell, including, let's say, he sells half of what he was instructed to sell, and then we finish up the discussion today with what if the instruction was to sell to one, and he sells to two or more buyers. Is that going to be considered a cancellation of his shlichus? Then we talked about a range of error within Beis Din. Beis Din selling the estate of the Yisomim, Machlokas in the Mishnah between the Tanakhama and Rashim and Gamliel, how much range of error is allowed. Remember, Eino Naba Karkos. So how much range of error? So the Chachamim say 6. And Rav Shimon Gamliel says more greater than a 6. And now what we learned today at the end of the daf is up to a half. And finally, the big discussion of today is, what about a shliach? What if a shliach sells land? Is he given no range of error like the widow? Or is he given a range of error like Beis Din of either a, well, I guess a six, because we don't have the argument of Makoch, Beis Din, Yafe. Is he given a six? So that the Gemara has a machlok, because the Gemara says that a shliach is like the widow, no range of error when the shliach is selling the... selling off the property. And then finally, a discussion in the Gemara of this principle, Makoch Beis Din Yafa. Does Rav Nachman subscribe to the principle, Makoch Beis Din Yafa? So the Gemara says that sometimes yes, sometimes no. It depends on the extent of the mistake that was made.